everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A-plus rating for over 5 years, partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the SFLC Podcast. I am Ryan Sprague. We want to thank everybody for tuning in, hitting that like and that download button on iTunes and Stitcher, Podomatic, checking us out on MyMMAnews.com. Always a pleasure, but right now, we are joined back on the SFLC podcast via the magic of Skype with one of the big winners coming off of his impressive victory at Bellator 202, a first round technical knockout over Ryan Walker. Welcome back to the show, Steve Thunderbeast Cazola. Steve, how are we doing a little bit after your fight here?
Feeling amazing, man. It's indescribable how amazing it was to get back in the win column. I love being back in Southern California. I love where I live, man. I love my family, my amazing wife, my son, you know, all my family members and my teammates that helped me through this whole thing. You know, it's been a rough couple fights, man, and to come back with a big win and make a statement that, you know, I just had some lessons to learn. I had some growing up to do as a fighter. I'm still here. I'm still dangerous. I'm still, you know, worthy to be noted as one of the best fighters out there. And I went out there and I demonstrated it. And I was very happy with my performance. I was very happy with my team. And I just couldn't be happier, man. I'm really happy with the result and just super blessed, super thankful.
Before we actually talk about the fight with Walker, I should mention in the interest of full disclosure that I had looked at you being on this fight card in 202, and the last time that I had been at Bellator was in Chicago, and we know that you were looking at being on that Chicago card, but I had heard that you had been released from Bellator after your loss to Jake Smith, and then were brought back on. How was that getting on to this card in LA after your loss against Jake Smith?
Man, it was a rough period, you know, because Bellator, you know, released me, and that was a hard pill to swallow. I mean, I know I had two losses, and they were two bad losses. I mean, I got decisioned by Carrington Banks in a way that he even 10-8ed me two rounds. And then I come back, and, you know, Bellator is a great thing. It gives me a big opportunity to fight at Pechanga, which is basically a hometown fight because I live in Southern California. I train at, you know, Dan Henderson, which is in Temecula. You know, and that's where Pechanga is in Temecula. And I had a chance to show something, be on the main card and lead it off again. So they gave me another great opportunity. And then, you know, I get knocked out in the first round and, you know, under a minute, just like, oh, man. You hit some low points, you get low to the low, and then, you know, they release you. And then, you know, that really sucked. But my manager, Tiki, is an amazing manager. He's an amazing man. He's like, listen, you know, I'm going to do everything in my power to, you know, get you this fight back because I think you deserve it. I think we can show the world who you are. And, you know, thank God for Tiki. Thank you so much for Bellator for listening and giving me this opportunity again, because they definitely didn't have to, but they did. They honored that last fight in my contract, which I can't be more thankful for, because it gave me this amazing opportunity to show, like, hey, I'm still here. I'm still relevant. I just had some growing up to do as a fighter and as a, you know, person. And, you know, to go out and demonstrate that, to show patience, show confidence, show tenacity, show that I can finish the fight, and you know, didn't even show that much. You know, it was really just boxing again, and I got so much more in my arsenal. I am Muay Thai certified. I can get down and show great wrestling and show great grappling and jujitsu. I have improved so much as an overall fighter, and you just saw, you know, 10% of what I've been working on. I can't wait to show even more. So I'm anxious to get back in there. I hope I get back in there for Bellator again, because I would love to be, you know, part of their growing company, and just hopefully they want to get behind me and I want to get behind them, and let's make this happen.
It wasn't a long layoff. We're looking at your fight against Jake Smith at the end of January, and then you turn around and you're fighting Bellator in July. Obviously, you missed that Chicago card that I know that you were dying to be on. But it was almost like an extra couple of months to prepare. So what was going through your mind in that 6 months, you know, other than you said it was a low point? How did you kind of pull yourself back up?
We just had to evaluate what was going on in my life as a man, my life as a fighter, my life as a businessman, as a worker, you know, because I'm not just 100% full-time fighter. I also have to have a job where I am a, you know, strength and conditioning coach, or I am a personal trainer. And, you know, I was holding a management position my last couple fights, and that was a lot of responsibility. And it was something that I didn't realize took so much of my time away. You know, I was commuting a lot to go back and forth up to Huntington Beach, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I was having to spend too much time, you know, worrying about my job as opposed to just worrying about being a fighter. You know, when you're just a coach, you just get to teach your classes, you have your clients, you know, it's all good. But when you go up to that management position, naturally more pressure, because you naturally just have more responsibility. And so that responsibility on top of my additional commuting time and everything like that, I just didn't realize how much added up, and it took my focus away of being a fighter. So I corrected those mistakes. I, you know, stepped down from my management position, just became a coach again, just was like, hey, I got, you know, my classes, I got my clients, keep it simple that way. Didn't commute as much, was only commuting like, you know, 1 or 2 days a week as opposed to 4 to 5. Just got back right mentally, you know, spiritually and physically, with my schedule and focusing on being a fighter as much as I possibly could while also making ends meet financially for my family. And I found that formula. I, you know, just found my good, you know, schedule with my training camp and felt better than ever, more focused than ever, more fierce than ever walking in there. And, you know, the results showed. So super thankful, super blessed.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because, you know, that was a topic of discussion with Brendan Schaub in Showtime, talking about what the fighters make and how they survive as fighters. And then you bring this up and having to constantly balance being a professional fighter while also being able to provide financially for your family. Man, you showed the struggle of that. Where do you find that balance?
It's hard, man, because, you know, I got to give a shout out to my wife right now, Ashley Cazola. Like, she's everything. She's the one that holds it down. Like, she's the one that's putting in that, you know, 40 hours plus, 40, you know, 50 hours plus a week, you know, working. And, you know, when money was low, she was bonusing at her job like a stud. You know, like, if it wasn't for her, like, I would already be out in the street, man. Like, I couldn't do it without my wife. Like, you know, we have these moments of great, you know, victories where we win fights and we get a nice paycheck, and it's awesome. You know, it's amazing. But otherwise, I gotta, you know, still work as much as I need to work to bring in something to help contribute to the household. Otherwise, we're not gonna be able to make it, especially living in Southern California. You know, it's expensive to live here. It ain't cheap. You know what I mean? And we just try to get it as simple as possible, and that's what we have to do, man. We you know, actually took a step back and we're like, hey, let's find like a little bit of a cheaper place. We're not worrying about rent as much. You know, let's get back to, you know, it's just the three of us. You know, what do we need? Like, what's enough? What's more than enough? Like, what do we need? So we took a step back and got a smaller place. I moved right before this fight. Like, literally a week before this fight, we were moving into a smaller apartment just to, you know, manage better financially and everything like that for everyone. And, you know, and it ended up being a great decision because, you know, home is where you make it. And, our, you know, this is exactly where we need to be right now in our lives. And then we come up with a big win. And, you know, I got some momentum behind me again. So, again, went from really low, like, oh, man, like, we got to win this fight. We're in a smaller place now. We're doing everything we can to make sure we're making ends meet. So, okay, we got a big win. Let's hopefully, you know, let's make a great deal with Bellator. Let's re-sign with them. And, you know, let's get on track. And, you know, things can turn around in a day, and we know that now.
And it absolutely did with that victory, that first round, like you said, TKO against Ryan Walker. Explain that to me. Walking into the ring, you know that, or the cage rather, you know that this is in the back of your mind. Did you shut that off, or did that add any extra pressure to you?
It naturally added extra pressure, but you did your best to just stay focused. I knew if I just kept it simple in my head that everything else would fall into place. And so keeping it simple was, we got focused on right now. Beat that man in front of you. You beat that man, everything else goes away. Beat that man, and everything else goes away. You train to beat that man, expect to win, go in there and show who the veteran fighter is, you know, in the organization, go in there and set the pace, control the setup, and come out with a victory for your family. You know, like, that's what, I mean, that's all it was. And it was just laser focused. It was just direct, right on the mission, right on the task, going for the kill, you know, but stay patient. And just, that's why I was like, just taking my time, picking my shots. I saw I was able to hurt him. I saw that I was faster right off the get. And, you know, it would end up working out for me. And I was just so happy to get a win for my family and for my team. Like, they deserve it because of how much they've invested into me, how much they've, you know, sacrificed. You know, everyone rides this roller coaster. It's not just me. It's my team. It's my family. And they ride it with us. So when I get a win like that, like, we all win. And they deserve that win just as much, if not more, than I did.
So you extend in this particular stretch with Bellator. You are 2-2. I believe you're 4-2 overall in Bellator. With the contract expiring after that last fight, where do you see your next step being? Do you see it still maintaining with Bellator, or do you look at it at this point and say, okay, my fight contract is over, I need to look at the possibility of other opportunities should Bellator not pick up the phone?
You know, right now, I have such a great relationship with Bellator that that's all I'm focused on right now. Is like, I want to make things good with them. They're the first ones to give me my opportunity in a major organization. They, you know, even after releasing me, they, which hurt at first, they brought me back, which, again, I'm super thankful for. So that they showed that, like, hey, we believe in you too. You know what I mean? So there's no reason for me to look anywhere else right now. It's, hey, Bellator, let's make this happen. Let's make sense for both of us. Let's make it a win-win, and let's go in there and, you know, make a statement that this was the right decision for you. And that's what I want to do. I want to get in there again as quickly as possible. I want to show Bellator, you know, gratitude and, you know, just thankful, like, hey, thank you for choosing me again, and I'm going to show you why, and go in there and finish the fight. And, you know, that's what I wish I could do, is go in there and finish the fight. Out of my 6 fights, I've won 4 of them, and all 4 were knockouts, and 3 of them were in the first round. And then in my losses, I had a big lesson. You know, I only went to decision once, which was uneventful decision, you know, but I didn't get hurt, didn't receive damage in Carrington Banks. And then, you know, it was one of those killer be killed moments I, you know, took a lesson from in Jake Smith. So, but those are lessons I think you need to take in this sport to grow and to have a mature mindset about it. And I think I've really reached that and shown that. And I'm ready to take on, you know, some of the best guys in the world at both 45 or 55. You know, there's a fight that makes sense too. Like, I want to do either one.
Now, we look at the concept of you ended up fighting early July. Most fighters tend to fight, 3 to 4 times a year. So based on what we see right now, to fight for Bellator again, your options really are to fight at the end of September at Bellator 206 in San Jose, which I'm sure you'd prefer because, again, that's right around your backyard. Or you have October 12th, Bellator 207 in Connecticut. Would you be able to fight either of those? Is there one that you prefer over the other?
You know, right now I'm open to the discussion. You know, right now I just want to focus on my 2.5-week vacation in the Bahamas with my family. You know, my manager Tiki is a very smart man in terms of, you know, strategizing what he thinks is best for me and my career. So I'm going to let Tiki and Bellator talk and, you know, figure out what as far as like a timeline makes sense for both of us. You know, I got some small things that need to heal up from the fight. I hit my hands. I'm pretty good. My hands are not broken, thank God, but my hands do need to heal up and just get better, which will be fine. And, I'll soak it in a nice salt bath in the Bahamas for 2.5 weeks and come back ready to get back to training slowly, but surely, and, you know, very tactically. So I come in at 100%. So, you know, if those dates make sense with me just needing to heal up a little bit naturally and getting a good training camp in, then, hey, those make sense. But if they don't, we need to push it back, then we'll figure that out as well. You know, I'll let Tiki and Bellator talk, and we'll make good business happen. We'll put on great shows for the fans in the future, and that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
Well, last time we saw you in Chicago, you seemingly had won that night by getting able to call out one Dylan Danis. Was there a lesson that you think that you learned by not calling out fighters, maybe being a little bit more receptive of just kick back and let everything else fall into place?
There's both, you know. I think if you want to fight someone, you should let me know that you want to fight someone. You know, I don't think there's any shame or wrong in that, in wanting to let someone know you want to fight them. At the same time, you know, there are other things, like just trying to call your shot too much, which I understand too. You're just kind of, hey, be a businessman, just take what they give you, be thankful for that. So again, see both sides. It's really just how you want to play. Like, I'm not going to call someone out just for the sake of calling someone out. You know what I mean? Like, I called out Dylan at that time because I truly believe that he was being fake and that he didn't earn what he was given in terms of this, you know, how much he's getting paid being an MMA fighter when he hasn't fought an MMA fight yet and all this stuff. I thought that he should have climbed some ladders first, and, you know, but that's who am I to judge. That's his life. That's his journey. And, you know, good for him. He got into a major organization, and he actually had a great first fight. He came back after getting hit. He did an impressive submission, and, you know, that's great. And really right now, Dylan doesn't want to fight me. I wouldn't want to fight me if I was Dylan, too. I'm too experienced. I'm too fast. I'm too well-rounded for the level he's at right now. And plus, he's at a weight that I don't even think that we could agree on. Like, I mean, he was at 175, you know, fighting at a catch weight, which means like he couldn't fight at 170 yet, you know, or would have a hard time making 170. And I'm at like 55, about to go down to 45. So the weight wouldn't make sense right now either. I mean, that's just a guy who I like to fight, just to kind of be like, you know, hit home with yourself a little bit, be a little bit more chill. But I just don't see it really, like, practically happening right now or in the near future. So I'm just going to, you know, let Bellator decide, and Bellator and the manager decide where to put me in what weight class, whether it's 45 max, 55 max, if the matchup makes sense. I'm ready to go for whoever and show that I'm here to stay.
Do you have anyone in mind that you'd like to fight for your next fight?
No, I really don't. You know, I think there's a lot of exciting matchups for me at both 55. I think there's exciting matchups for me at 45. I think there's even guys at either weight class that'd be, you know, willing to fight at a catchweight at 150 to see how much I like, you know, fighting down a little bit. So, I, you know, that's what's great about Bellator is, like, they don't mind doing catchweight fights too. You know, like, hey, like, you know, what if there's a guy from 45 who, you know, wants to come up a little bit? You know, we can meet in the middle at 50 and see how we like it. You know, that, I think that's really cool that we can maybe do something like that. Or, you know, maybe there's another fight at 55 that makes sense. Like, it's just a good matchup. It's a fun fight. I think I could, you know, do well in maybe that. Or there's a, like, hey, let's test yourself at 45. Here's a good matchup for you to put you in a good spot in the division. You know, all those things make sense. And we'll definitely find out something in the near future, which I'm excited about.
Well, you were able to get that last fight on your contract, and you kind of, if nothing else, went out with a bang. So you're getting ready to go on vacation. Obviously, I'm not going to keep you too much longer. We've had you on before. You know the drill, Steve. All your sponsors, where we can find you on social media. We always look forward to catching you and seeing what's next in your horizon.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Well, first of all, Ryan, thank you again for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you to all my teammates and my family, you know, my team, Huntington Beach Ultimate Training Center, Dan Henderson's Athletic Fitness Center, 10th Planet Oceanside. Thank you so much to my sponsors, Purist Labs, SoCal Fresh Prep, Quality Environmental, Monster, Clinch here. I mean, these are the people that help me and my family stay afloat and support us no matter what. Thank you to my manager, Tiki, for, you know, being the best, and, you know, he's a great coach. My brother, Alex, for always being by my side. Again, my wife, Ashley, she's my queen, she's my everything. My family, my team. That's what it's all about. Proud to be an American. You know, God bless everyone. And hell yeah, I'm the happiest person in the world right now. Let's go, champ.
I appreciate Steve Cazola for taking his time with us. Stay tuned, everybody. When we come back, we will have American Top Team Strength and Conditioning Coach Phil Deru joining us on the SFLC podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to the SFLC podcast. Want to give a big shout out to Steve Cazola coming on with his big victory at Bellator over the weekend. But we move right along, and we're joined by Mr. Mike Pendleton from Chicago, Illinois. Mike, thank you for taking the time with us. It's always kind of interesting seeing what your schedule is and my schedule is and Steve's schedule is. We kind of get everybody going at once.
Well, for the sake of my job, I'm not going to say I'm at work, but you know, the timing, I always make it work.
I hear you loud and clear, brother. I will not say a word. And then, of course, we also want to welcome onto our show for the first time another member of American Top Team. I feel like this gym's been giving us a lot of love lately, so I'm really appreciative of them. Phil Darrow, the strength and conditioning coach. Phil, thank you for taking the time with us this afternoon, and I'm glad to have you on for the first time on the SFLC podcast.
Oh, man, I'm glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
We were talking with Mike Brown earlier, and he was talking about all the fighters that American Top Team has. Your gym is one of the top echelon gyms in the world for MMA. But Phil, you didn't start in MMA. You were actually a college football player and got your degree in, I believe, kinesiology, correct?
It was sports medicine and exercise science. Close, though. Similar.
Trying to get there. Exactly. So how did you end up getting that jump from college football and using exercise science and combining those two and transitioning them into the sport of mixed martial arts?
Well, I don't know if you guys know this, but I also was a pro fighter for about 8 years. Dean Thomas was my first coach after I got done playing football. So it wasn't a too bad of a transition. I took some of the basics from strength training that we utilize in a sport like football, like any other strength power sport. I utilized those techniques, but then you also have to understand that MMA is a mixed aerobic system sport. So I have to make sure that I'm connecting these dots and making sure that everybody is getting what they need. And we are encompassing every aerobic capacity within the time frame that we have in a training camp, which is at some points can be very difficult because of all of the stuff that they're doing throughout the days and the weeks with all the skills training, you know, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, things like that. And then, you know, throw in strength and conditioning there. So my main goal really is to make sure we're managing fatigue and that we're progressing them so that they can peak right on time for their fights. So, I mean, utilizing proper periodization protocols that, you know, that we've learned, that I've learned, in, not only in school, but primarily when I got out of school, you know, with more just reading and actually understanding, you know, proper periodization protocols from, you know, the old Soviet Union back in the day, you know, with all their stuff. I mean, primarily what we utilize as a strength coach is all the stuff from Russia, which is, it's funny to me because I go now to like Dagestan and I'm out there in Chechnya with a lot of these killers, you know, that that fight, and you know, they really don't know how to really train, and you have to take the step back and show them that there is a proper approach to everything. You need to have a systematic strategy, and it's not all about, you know, just throwing shit at the wall trying to make it stick, you know. So that's primarily what I do. Is I'm almost like a firefighter. I try to put out fires and make sure that they're getting the job done, but also we're recovering properly so that they can train and do what they need to do on a daily basis.
Yes, sir.
So I don't know. A lot of people don't know this. Some people do. The first gym I ever walked into was your gym down in ATT. The first person I ever hit mitts with or got lessons from was the same guy who started you off in Dean Thomas. But I kind of want to take it through what the casual fan, because that was the first time I ever walked into a gym and was like, oh, this is a legit fight gym, from everything, from the coaches to the sections of the gym to every little inch in that gym is accounted for as one of the best gyms in the world. And the casual fan will hear this conversation and they'll want to talk like things that only a casual fan could talk about. Like, how could Conor McGregor gas out against Nate Diaz when he's bigger and all of this? So like, if I'm using that example, and not to talk about a fighter that you don't work with, but let's just use fighter A, how, how do you go in and even with the, you know, UFC Performance Institute and everything that's available to all these fighters, what makes you different in the sense that, hey, I know your limitations, because there are limitations that some fighters can't get past. How do you take fighters to better their limitations and really just become better physical freaks of nature?
Well, I mean, everybody nowadays is kind of getting used to the notion of we need strength and conditioning for MMA and combat sports in general, where before that, you know, it was kind of like a misnomer, like people didn't really want to lift weights. They thought they would get slow and sluggish. Now with the introduction of places like the UFC Performance Institute and, you know, people that are professionals now that really have the science backing are coming into the sport and really truly understanding what they need to do to get these athletes better. You know, for me, my whole thing is you have to make sure that you collect data. We have to make sure that we're getting proper assessments done. And then from there, you can, you know, correlate what they do through each training session throughout the weeks. So I guess the thing that you could say that sets me apart, though, is that I know how these fighters feel and I know what they go through on a daily basis because I've been through it myself. I was actively competing in MMA since I was 20 years old. And I understand how it feels to weight cut. I understand how it feels to be dead tired and trying to go and do another training session. And then as far as like the mental aspect of the game where, you know, you're worried about how to perform on the time when you need to be, you know, every training session, if you don't do your best or you feel like you haven't put forth your absolute energy, you feel like it was a waste or that you're not going to be prepared for the fight. All these things go into fighters' minds throughout the days and throughout the weeks of a training camp. And that's why I can connect.
Oh, did I lose you?
Hello?
Hey, sorry, Phil. I thought I lost you for a minute. You cut off there.
Okay, where'd we end up at?
Oh, it was just a few seconds ago. You were talking about the concept of you knowing what it's like to be dog tired from a fighter.
Just to connect with these fighters on that, in that way, you know, I think that helps me out a lot. And then knowing, you know, several different demands of the sport and truly knowing the ins and outs, especially when it comes down to even transitioning over into the skills training, when it comes down to physical preparation, I know exactly what muscles work what for what type of style or what type of art. And then I know how to actually translate that over to where they're actually going to improve from a performance standpoint to benefit them in their specific skills and training and tactical work that they do. I mean, I guess that pretty much sums it up for me.
Now, Coach, you were talking a lot about how there's specific ways that your muscles get engaged for a fighter as perhaps other sports, such as most notably football. So we know that there are dozens of weightlifting regimens that exist in the world of football and baseball and all that, but there isn't necessarily that definitive weightlifting program in mixed martial arts, or is there?
Well, not yet. I mean, for me, I don't think that the perfect program is probably ever going to be out there. It's not one size fits all, especially in a sport like MMA, where it's strictly individualized. And even with the systems that I have several programs and several systems that I utilize per individual, just because, like I said, not one size will always fit, you know, everyone. So we want to make sure that we are, you know, directing them in the right way. And the lines got to connect, like I said before. So there is no one workout or one training, but the one thing I can say is that you have to make sure that you're stimulating aerobic capacities, you're working on strength and power, and then from there you want to work on maximal speed, and then your conditioning has to be on point from a skills perspective. So they have to be able to do, you know, their job or their sport in a sense as efficiently as possible without getting tired, especially during training camp.
Of course. And I think that's kind of where the sport of mixed martial arts is unlike any other. You were talking about having to have conditioning almost like we're talking about a distance runner. as opposed to having speed drills like you're a sprinter. Very few people are both, you know? So I guess that's where your position comes in being very necessary, is finding that perfect blend of speed meeting conditioning and then power meeting agility. So I'm not going to ask for a specific fighter, but let's say that one of your fighters comes in 8 weeks out, full fight camp, and, you know, they have, what, 19, 20 pounds to lose, but they also want to be at their best physical condition. What's going through your mind when the fighter first comes over and says that to you? Do you already have a game plan in motion, or are you kind of just building on what we have seen from that fighter in the past?
Yeah, well, like I said, you have to collect data. So we have to get a needs analysis. We have to get a full assessment done. And that's a physiological assessment, a fitness assessment, and then, you know, something along the lines of getting a DEXA scan done to see where their body fat lies, and we can correlate that with the weight cut. And then from there, you know, see how much muscle mass they have on them, how strong they are, you know, where they want to improve upon, what type of fighter they are actually. You know, if I have a guy like a Tyron Woodley, who's totally different than somebody like a Dustin Poirier, because one guy is predominantly fast twitch, the other guy is predominantly slow twitch. One guy is going to have more benefit doing certain things than the other. So we got to make sure that we are closing gaps, in a sense, and trying to make sure that we are encompassing full circle on what they need, especially coming down, you know, closer to the fight. But if I had a guy 8 weeks out, or girl, whatever the case may be, like I said, I want to get a full assessment done. And we do that usually around 9 weeks out. So then when we start camp, they're ready to go. Half the time, a lot of my people that I work with are on a out of camp program or a protocol that they use that's gonna enhance their work capacity, their general physical preparedness, get them ready to start camp, because I don't want them coming into camp out of shape. I want them to actually have, you know, they're almost there. Not fully there, but almost there. I would say around 70. Maybe 75%, you know, starting in camp. This way they can go full go when they need to. We deload them halfway through. Around 5 weeks out is usually when I see a drop off, so that on the 4 weeks out, we can get a super compensation effect. And then from there, we just go ahead and taper off the 2 weeks and peak them right when they need to. Because the end, and a lot of my guys and girls fight in, you know, bigger promotions, so they're gone, you know, the week before the fight. So I see them maybe, you know, the last day I see them is going to be a week before. So I want to make sure that we're getting that end of camp assessment, see exactly how much we improved, and then just be ready. You know, a lot of that goes into psychological benefit too as well. If they see, and I know they're going to see increases in overall performance, they're going into the fight knowing that they've done everything they possibly could, especially from my point of view, from a physical preparation standpoint. They're ready. They're capable to perform at their peak. And all they have to do now is worry about their weight cut. And usually we have guys in mind for that. So that's to sum it up for you guys a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm ready to come back down to Florida right now. I'm sick and tired of looking like a 12-year-old boy. Kind of thinking what you do and your background, the things you did before you got into this line of work, I'll talk about one of your fighters down at your gym, Greg Hardy. I'm not bringing up Greg Hardy's past. I'm bringing up Greg Hardy, the athlete, the fighter. What has been your biggest challenge, or maybe the one thing you have an upper hand in with him, whether it's working with him or talking with him, and a sense of that football background? I guess my biggest question is, because we're seeing this jump a lot where former football players, whether it was in college or in the NFL, get into mixed martial arts. Do they have a benefit coming from professional football or collegiate football into mixed martial arts?
I would say they know they know their body very well. So Greg is a perfect example of that. He knows what he needs to do to get better. Very respectful. Like, people really don't understand. I'm not trying to bring up his past or even, I've never had any problems with Greg whatsoever. And the good thing about it is that we can connect because we come from that football background where, you know, like a team sport approach where, you know, you're held accountable. You know, you have certain roles that you need to play as far as the team goes. And we try to image ourselves as a team, even though it's an individual sport, we are American Top Team. So we want to make sure that we're there for each other. But whenever I ask, you know, him how he's doing and things like that, he's 100% accurate with what I would feel he'd be feeling. So he's not usually lying to me. That's a good thing. So he stays honest, which is something of a struggle sometimes with a lot of fighters that really haven't been in a sport before. They just automatically just started fighting. They adopted that kind of warrior mentality, or, you know, hard-headedness, I would say. And we're trying to, you know, limit that as much as we can. We're trying to make sure that they're acting like true professionals, just like Greg does, man. So I do appreciate something like that. And he's highly athletic. The only thing we really have to hone in on is his skills and his skills in the sport itself. And then from there, just a little bit of conditioning. I mean, he's a big guy, very strong, very powerful. Mobility and conditioning would be something that we always want to, you know, improve upon, just because of where he's coming from and what type of person he is as far as from an athletic standpoint. And we can improve upon that as we go. First, knocking guys out in the round anyway, so it really doesn't matter at this point.
Absolutely. The let's call it limited skill set he has right now is proving to be more than enough at the next level, and I'm really excited to see where he goes as a fighter. You know, I mentioned that you guys were the first gym I ever walked into, and it was state of the art. You know, it was, I walked in on a Lamborghini gym. You know, it was incredible. For me, when I hear you talking about these things, I won't mention other gyms, but there are other gyms, we'll call them top gyms in the world, that I could walk into, and I wouldn't have all the resources. I wouldn't have all the coaches. Maybe they have all the right equipment to get a fighter right, but they don't have all the equipment or the trainers or the coaches to get an athlete right. So what do you think really separates American top teams from everybody else?
I think that, you know, it doesn't even have to do with the amenities and the, you know, how big our facility is or anything like that. I believe that it is the fighters that we have there. You know, iron sharpens iron, and we have the top, without a doubt, some of the top fighters in the world, not just in the UFC, but in, like, in general. We have, I train over 30 to 50 fighters that are usually in the UFC, Bellator, and the big promotions, and they all have, you know, something to bring to the table. So everybody's getting better with the partners that they have. Us as coaches, we come from fighting backgrounds, all of us. So we know how it feels, and we know what we need to do to get these guys ready, especially at the higher levels. And most of the guys that's coaching have fought at the higher level. So that's even better. So I think that it's a mix of, you know, the talent that we have as far as fighters go, and then the cohesiveness between the team and the coaching staff, which really sets us apart.
And Coach, you were talking about a few of your athletes, obviously Greg Hardy, a great example of somebody who's transitioning like you had transitioned. But obviously we have UFC Fight Night in Calgary that's coming up at the end of the month. And you, sir, have been posting quite a bit of some work that you've done specifically with Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and then also showing some stuff with Dustin Poirier. You were working with Tyron Woodley last year. But leading into Calgary, how has Joanna really taken to the strength and conditioning side of this following her loss with Rose?
I mean, we've always had a good relationship, me and Jay. I think that when she started at American Top Team, she really didn't do a lot of strength and conditioning. So I had to make sure that we eased her in with a lot of things. But now we've developed a system, and I know exactly what she needs at certain times, you know, how she's going to feel at certain times throughout the camp. And she's taking a liking to it. She likes to train. She likes to work out. She likes to do strength and conditioning. She feels her body getting stronger, feeling more powerful, more stability. She's already lightning fast with her strikes. It's just giving her the ability to do it for a longer duration, which is repeated sprint ability that I utilize, and also, you know, increasing overall force production through higher amounts of strength training, but also making sure, because she has to make weight, we don't put on too much muscle. But, you know, that's getting deeper into the side of things. But all I can say is that we've increased rate of force production, which will also enhance explosive power. And then from there, she just utilizes that speed to make it happen. Now, the good thing is that we are very knowledgeable with her opponent come in this fight here. Tisha, I've actually trained as well, and pretty much all the coaches have trained her. You know, so I mean, we have a good good idea of what, you know, Tisha is going to try to put to the table, and so that we can negate that with our means of preparation.
And how about Dustin Poirier? I know that you've been more focused with Joanna, but he's looking very fight ready to go up against Eddie Alvarez in the 155-pound division. Has he been able to take to it the same way that Joanna has?
Oh, no. I mean, now, let me just, I want to say, first and foremost, there's no one person that I'm actually, you know, paying more attention to. I'm paying attention to all my fighters. But Dustin, for sure, I think that Dustin's taken to me and to strength conditioning without a doubt, primarily more than any other of my fighters that I have. You know, I've been training Dustin now for 3 years straight, and you can see a tremendous increase in his overall power, his strength, and his body looks different. If you look at his body now than when he fought, you know, obviously he fought at 145, but even when he started at 155, you know, 3 years ago roughly, you know, we put on a good amount of muscle on him where the weight cut's a lot easier. He's stronger. He has more structural integrity. He's able to produce more power. And he already has a crazy gas tank. So I hold him close, you know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, I know that he can be a champion, and he knows he can be a champion, and it's only a matter of time, and we need to put things in place, you know, to do so. And obviously higher things are gonna come of that, as far as, you know, he's gotta beat Eddie, obviously, we know that. But then, you know, the whole thing with Connor and Habib, and we got to see what plays out there. But if everything's aligned and we do our job, we should get a title shot, and we'll have a belt around his waist, you know, by, you know, 2019, somewhere around there at least.
I love hearing that. Mike Pendleton, I know that you had another question for Phil.
Yeah, so in what you do, I know we're seeing the results in Dustin, and you just talked about Joanna. I'm curious from your standpoint, maybe you could break down a little bit for us simple-minded people, how to understand the difference. And so Dustin went from 145 to 155, the challenge is there. And where do you stand on Joanna? Possibly everyone says, oh, she needs to go to 125, she needs to go to 125. Like, where do you stand on those two and the difference in maybe moving up 10 pounds?
Well, yeah, I mean, for us, him, you know, Dustin make the switch to 55. He enjoys training a lot more. He doesn't have to worry about the weight cut. All he has to worry about is his performance each and every day. And he's enjoying the process a lot more. And it's not in the back of his mind that he has to make weight, which is another thing that plays into a mentality of a fighter, especially during camp. All right, but as far as Joanna, you know, I believe that, yeah, 125 would be a better look. People don't know that Joanna's a very, I'm not trying to say she's a big girl, but she's definitely big for the weight class. You know, she's thick in the legs. You know, she does have a longer body type. She's like 5'6", 5'7". She's damn near, you know, one of the bigger girls in the gym. You know, and that's saying a lot, because we do have Amanda and we have, you know, other 135ers too. But I think that once you can, you know, stop worrying about weight cutting and start worrying about performance, and then you stop worrying about having to eat a certain way and, you know, be in a calorie deficit throughout your entire training camp, which does decrease the rate of recovery. And then from there, if we don't recover, then we can't train as much. We can't train as much. We can't get better. And then we don't, you know, we're just playing, you know, we're playing a role here where we have to do what we can at times where we can't just progress. And the problem there is that, you know, at the end of the day, we want to make sure that they're progressing each and every day. But if we're playing against a weight cutting issue, then that's a problem. But, you know, we get the job done. I think that she does what she needs to do. She understands her body, which is really good. She works with George Lockhart, which is awesome. You know, me and George converse, you know, every other week. And we have a good understanding of what we need to do to get her weight she needs it. And she's a monster, man. She trains hard all the time. Like, we have to pull her back constantly because she just wants to train and get better and be a champion again. And I think that once, like I said, all the pieces are in line and we can get that title back, that's going to happen.
So this has all been great and informative stuff. I think the hardest question I have here for you is, Dean made me believe that I could actually punch something and it would hurt that other person. But walking around, my state of Illinois license says that I am 5'8", 145, but yet everyone confuses me as a 12-year-old. So how long, this million-dollar question, would it take for me to have to work with you to actually look like a 26-year-old grown man?
Oh, man, I mean, listen, we're playing against genetics here, man. I can do my work. Not a miracle worker, brother. I got to have time, you know what I mean? Got to put time and consistency. Listen, anybody can do it. And I'm going to get a little bit on my motivational side, but anybody can do this shit, you know what I mean? The problem is, people don't want to... They get motivated, but that doesn't mean anything if you don't follow through. So at the end of the day, you have to find your goal of what you want to do, put that to the side, and have little goals to accomplish the big goal at the end. Make sure that you're consistently working towards the end goal with little goals to be accomplished throughout that time frame. And that, if that does what it needs to do, then yeah, you'll get to where you want to be sooner than later. But then again, we're also playing with genetics, and you do look like a 12-year-old, so I don't know how to work that out. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, we can't. Go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, I can do with what I have. But no, your motivation is definitely right. I like that. I like the little goals, the big goals thing. I actually love that.
Now, we do have to put Dean on blast a little bit because we were talking and Dean needs to do some work with strength and conditioning and a little bit of weight management as well, doesn't he, Phil?
All right, now listen, I've known him for roughly almost 10 years now, and I've seen him fluctuate in weight, but now it's consistently going up. I think he's eating too many grilled cheese sandwiches and bologna sandwiches over there. I know he likes hot dogs for some reason. I think he likes hot dogs. He's eating a ton of that. I think we need to stop that. I know he likes donuts, but... To his defense, he has been trying intermittent fasting, and he is doing it consistently, like I said before. And hopefully, this can bring him down. Now, as far as strength conditioning goes, Dean will never pick up a weight a day in his life. He may pick up a Coke can, he may pick up a beer bottle, but he's not picking up any weights, trust me.
maybe he needs to work with Lockhart over there. Maybe Lockhart can help him out with that.
Oh, well, listen, we tried that too, and he has his own diet. And ask him about it when you see him. It's called the Dinero diet, where basically what he does is he eats fried chicken and he also eats onion rings. And after that puts him in a calorie deficit because he's only eating one time a day. So that may work because you're in a calorie deficit, but at the end of the day, he still looks like he's eating pork rinds every other day. His pores are killing me, you know. But listen... But I know he looks very young. He's still very young. I mean, I think he's reaching about 55, I want to say. But he looks about 36. I'm glad. I'm glad he's still keeping his youth with all that, you know, with all the Kentucky Fried Chicken and Popeyes that he likes.
Well, Coach, we obviously love all the feedback. And it's always good to be able to take shots and have some fun with the other guys from the team. Again, you guys have been great with us. But before we let you go, Mike, did I miss anything? I know that I kind of threw this on you at the last second, Phil.
I actually have one that he just mentioned in his roast of Dean Thomas that I know I've heard Kevin Lee say it, and I just kind of want to get your take on it. How do you feel about fighters and lifting weights? Like, is weightlifting, I know we just did a whole interview about it, but how do you feel about guys or just anybody in general, fighters or not, that don't lift weights but find other ways to work out?
Listen, I'm not going to sit here because I'm the strength guy and say that you have to lift weights. I mean, a lot of the time you can get strong by other means of training, but the only way to improve maximal strength is to move heavy load. So you have to get stronger by putting more external load on your body and being able to lift it. If that's your goal, if you're weak as shit and that's something that you need to improve upon, then lifting weights will help your game. You know, it come do it the wrong way. You don't have a professional that's looking over your systems. So if you do have a coach and they know what they're doing, I suggest you go talk to them and look into lifting weights properly to help performance instead of just going into a Gold's Gym and doing whatever you want. Doing a buys and tries workout, because I guarantee you that's not going to translate over into the fight game.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that was probably one of the biggest things that I was looking forward to and that we were able to discuss in this little three-way discussion was being able to talk about weightlifting as it pertains to MMA, not just weightlifting as it pertains to strength. Because, of course, when you lift, you're going to be strong, but strong won't always translate into being a good fighter.
No, not at all. But like I said, but strength can increase power, obviously. Strength can increase your conditioning, and it also can increase the reduction of the risk of injury. So those types of things do come into play, especially when you're talking about a high-impact sport, a contact sport like MMA. So, if you don't have, like I told you, if you don't have somebody that's actually a true professional that can watch over you, I would search for somebody and don't just go ahead and do whatever you want. So that's one thing I will say. I'll throw that out here. Like I said, if you want to work on things that are going to get you stronger from a skill-specific or a sports-specific realm, I would say, wrestling and grappling in the gi, doing jiu-jitsu in the gi will definitely help your isometric strength. It'll help your core stability. Wrestling, the same concept. As far as striking goes, hitting the pads, hitting the heavy bag will actually help you increase your power output, things like that, your speed, timing. And then as far as like other means of not lifting weights, if you wanted to work on just maximal speed as far as sprinting goes, not that it correlates over to the fight game, but if you want to increase your speed, your lower body speed, just to be more elusive in the cage, then yeah, you can do something like a track protocol or even gymnastics to help with overall body awareness and being more elusive and fluent in your fight skills and into the competition itself.
Excellent. Now, Coach, one more question before we kind of wrap things up. And I've always enjoyed this question. Being somebody who works with a fighter, with all of the fighters that you work with, if there was one exercise that you love to put all of your athletes through, which exercise would that be?
Okay, so people that know me and follow me on social media are already going to know what I'm going to say, which is the Zercher squat. And the reason why I say the Zercher squat is because it's very sports specific as far as the transition into the sport itself, because of where the bar is placed. It's easily done and it doesn't take a whole lot of technical efficiency. It is very safe to do, where you're not putting axial load on the spine, and it's also teaching the athlete how to actually do a proper squat, because you have a counterbalance with the barbell. And lastly, you're working muscle groups that will increase the strength of your work inside the cage. What I mean by that is it's going to help with takedowns, it's going to help with takedown defense, it's going to help with striking, it's going to help with a lot of things, because you're working the entire body with this compound movement. So, so to answer your question in the short, it's the Zercher squat.
And is there any, a follow-up to that, is there any exercise that you have your fighters do that they unanimously hate you making them do?
Everybody hates prowler pushes or prowler sprints. That's one thing that people will definitely go without. And it's one thing that I will not go without. So if you train with me, damn sure believe you're going to hit some prowler sprints or some prowler marches or some sort of prowler movement. And what a prowler is basically a sled with two handles where we can stack weights on, to as heavy as we want it. And on the warning, it has a disclosure on the warning that if you do throw up or pass out, it's not on them. And it damn sure ain't on me, because you signed a waiver as soon as you step in American Top Team. So prowler pushes for sure, hands down, nobody really wants to do those, but they're very beneficial as well.
Outstanding, Coach. Look, we really appreciate you taking the time with us and, giving us an in-depth look at how there's several pieces to this puzzle that creates a whole packaged fighter, from the striking coach to the wrestling coach, to the strength and conditioning coach, to the nutritionist. And that's why the fighters always say, I wouldn't be here without my team, because it really is a team. You guys spend countless hours with these fighters, and it shows in the ring. They show it in the ring to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I think, without a team and without a team that has a good plan, you definitely plan to fail, and you have to have a team around you that's knowing of your goals and what you want to accomplish. And everybody has to be, cohesive in their approach. And that's where the lines of communication come into play. And once you have that and you have a solid set mind and you know where you want to be, sky's the limit for sure.
All right, Coach, before we let you go, we know that you're with American Top Team, but we also know that you're working with several people. So take the time to let everybody know where they can find you personally, if they have questions about their own strength and conditioning, if they want to join you on American Top Team. Let everybody know where to find you on social media and everywhere that we can find you.
Yeah, sure. So I take a lot of questions on social media, especially on my Instagram. You can DM me. My Instagram is at DaruStrong, D-A-R-U Strong. My Twitter is at DaruStrong. I also have a YouTube page out that I do put a lot of content on out there. Just search Phil Daru. You'll see me there. And then my website, www.darustrong.com. And so that's what I'm doing, man. And if you ever want to get any online programming or any type of training, I definitely have programs out. And all you have to do is just email me. You can email me, phil@darustrong.com. And that's it, man.
Phenomenal stuff there from Phil Daru from American Top Team. Always interesting to get that outside perspective. There's so much that goes into the fight game that we look past when we end up seeing fighters fight. We forget that there's a huge team that contributes to the success of every individual fighter. But just like that, we are out of time. We want to thank Phil Daru and Steve Cazola for joining us on the show today. Stay tuned as we'll have more coming up with Mike Pendleton, Mike McAllister, Stephen Dunn, and of course myself. I am Ryan Sprague. On behalf of the SFLC podcast, thank you for tuning in, everybody.